You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to Built for the Stage podcast. This is Joe Brosco, founder of Built for the Stage, Broadway's number one fitness platform. If you haven't tried out Built for the Stage yet, go to builtforthestage.com and we'll be on our way with 7 days of a free trial working one-on-one together on a fitness app. If you're looking to marry your pursuit of a career in theater with a pursuit in an amazing practice of fitness, I'm your guy. Been at this for 17 years. I'm a unicorn that loves fitness, sports, and other things that have nothing to do with theater while also loving theater at the same time. Hung up my acting chops to help others in this world of fitness. So would love to get to know you. Check it out, builtforthestage.com. Special thanks to BPN, Broadway Podcast Network. Check them out at bpn.fm. All right, let's get into it. Special guest, recording here on a Friday. It's 4 p.m. on the East Coast. Usually around this time, I'm a little tired, I'm a little groggy, whatever, you know, long work day. But I got the juices flowing because I'm excited to speak to our guest. I can't wait for you to get to meet her. Our guest is originally from Las Vegas, Nevada, where she was brought into this world dramatically on the night that Mike Tyson bit off Evander Holyfield's ear. Can you believe it? If you're listening to this, speaking of things unrelated to theater, and you're like, who's Mike Tyson or who's Evander Holyfield? There was this time in a pro boxing match in 1990, I'll leave it out, in the 90s. I don't know if my guest wants to give away her date of birth. Anyways, the 90s. And Mike Tyson is locked up with this other guy, Evander Holyfield, and just decides to bite his ear and literally rips a part of his earlobe off. And yeah, so the fight's over. They rush. I don't know if they rush him, but they take him to the hospital so they can try to, I guess, stitch his ear back on. And while they're stitching his ear back on, a couple of floors up, our guest was being brought into this world. Can you believe it? Not only was our guest brought in this world on such dramatic fashion, but later on they became a Missouri Show Choir national champion. I think that's right. Yeah, that's right. Okay, good. And some affirmations. They later on graduated from the Hart School, and now they recently made their Broadway debut in Funny Girl. Please welcome to Built for the Stage podcast, Leslie Blake Walker. Hey! So much for being on the pod. What's up?
Oh man, thank you so much for having me. My go-to fun fact, my Mike Tyson story. I'm obsessed.
Yeah, I was on your website reading the about you section and I was like, no way.
Oh yeah, my dad was in the waiting room of the hospital while my mom was in like her, I don't know, like 18th hour of labor. He's chain smoking, like everybody's stressed out. Up rolls 7 stretch limousines, and he watches Evander Holyfield walk in with his severed ear. Like, just watches him come in. It's in a little, like, ice cup. He's got his little earpiece in it.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe there's, like, a play or a musical in that. Like, you have that moment, and then you follow, like, the rest of Evander's maybe life in boxing and onward, and then you – the trajectory of your life, like crisscrossing. And then maybe down the road, like he sees this girl in a Broadway show and they meet at the stage door and she's like, hey, the night I was born, your ear was bitten off.
I love it. Let's get it greenlit.
I think we could do it. We could make some bangers of songs to that for sure.
Oh, absolutely. A nice little boxing and Broadway musical. I'm obsessed.
Absolutely. It's already been done with Rocky and we all know how that went. So hopefully Oh, anyways. All right. So where are you calling from in New York?
What part? Williamsburg.
Williamsburg. Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I'm a Brooklyn girl. You always have resided in Brooklyn and in Williamsburg, or have you hopped around the city a bit?
Oh, I've been a little bit of everywhere. When I first got to New York, I started off in Inwood, then spent a little bit of time in Manhattan Valley. And then for the entirety of this past year, I was in Midtown. And then I only just this week moved to Williamsburg. So I literally just made my way down.
Yeah. You just got there. Okay. Well, yeah. Hopefully you're getting settled in successfully.
Yeah. It's been great so far. I love the neighborhood. It's nice and residential and a little quieter than, you know, Midtown Manhattan. So I'm enjoying it so far.
Right. Speaking of a little bit quieter, how was that transition from growing up in Missouri to coming to New York? Because you're still young. Like you haven't been in New York too long, you know?
Yeah. I graduated college in 2019. And then I was only here for a little under like 8 months. And then the pandemic hit and my family had moved back to Las Vegas. And so I spent the majority of the, you know, height of the pandemic years in Vegas and then didn't come back to New York until August of 2021. And so all of my time in New York has been very scattered. But it was definitely a transition, especially coming from, you know, suburbia of Missouri and then going to Hartford, Connecticut for college, which was also different. And then I would spend weekends going on the Metro North to come into the city for like auditions and stuff every once in a while. But living here is so vastly different. I'm used to having a car. I'm used to like being in control of where I am at every single point in the day, you know, and New York, like it happens to you, not with you. But I do love it here. I think the people are incredible. And I think they're some of the most like helpful, nicest, you know, everybody think everybody in New York is mean and everything. It's like, no, I think they're some of the most, you know, resourceful people in this country. I do love it. I've come to love it.
I would agree. They're pretty hard people, but they also relate to the struggle. So if they see a fellow New Yorker in that struggle, they can relate. And usually they're pretty nice about it for sure. I'll agree.
Yeah.
I've never been to Vegas. Are you close to the Strip or where are you?
I grew up mainly in North Las Vegas. And my dad is a craps dealer at one of the.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing.
Oh yeah. My mom was a showgirl. She danced for Siegfried and Roy and did a bunch of the magic acts out here. And my dad was an actor for a while. And then he, you know, still works in the casino industry. And that's up in Red Rock Summerlin area and everything. And so I've bopped around Vegas a lot. I don't, if you've never been there, but it's a basin and it's all so vastly spread out.
Yeah.
So everything's super condensed in the middle with, you know, downtown Vegas and the Strip and everything, but then it all becomes more residential the further out in the basin you get. So I grew up in a little like suburb of Vegas, but it was Vegas proper. So.
Got it. Okay. So you graduate from the Hart School and then what happens? The red carpet's rolled out and you get cast on the Broadway show or what happened?
Not exactly. I went and did Connecticut Repertory Theater as a summer stock, right after I graduated. And then when I got to New York, you know, I started auditioning like everybody else. And the first sort of big thing that I booked was I did Cinderella at Paper Mill. And then that was literally the last thing I did before shutdown. So I do Paper Mill, world shuts down. I'm in Vegas for a couple of years and then I come back to New York and Funny Girl was my second audition back. And I booked that a month after I got back into New York. So it was this massive gap and then boom, suddenly all my dreams are coming true. It was crazy.
How about during the summer in school where you did summer stock and things of that matter?
Yeah. So in Missouri, I grew up doing summer stock at the Arrow Rock Lyceum Theater, which is this teeny tiny little Equity Regional Theater, a little outside of Kansas City. And I did 9 seasons there. So that went into college. I stopped working there after my sophomore year. And then I worked at the Surflight Theater in Beach Haven, New Jersey on the beach, did a whole summer there. And then after I graduated, I did Connecticut Repertory Theater, which was so much fun getting to work with, you know, Terry Mann and Kristen Waz and all them. Like they were fantastic.
Gotcha. And do you get an agent or your equity card or anything during college? Or I'm trying to lay this out for our listeners, especially younger ones, like, what was your journey making it on when you got the Funny Girl audition and all that? Did you have representation and da 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 da?
Yeah, absolutely. So I got my agents through my college showcase, which was, I was so incredibly fortunate to get them through them. And I've been with them ever since. And so I stayed with them through the pandemic and everything. I love my agents. I'm with CESD. And I pretty much all of my auditions now come through them. I don't do a whole lot of ECCs and EPAs and stuff. And so the second I heard of the Funny Girl breakdown being sent out, you know, we subscribe to those little Broadway World emails that come in your inbox at the end of every day saying, let's put up. Second, I saw it go up and I saw the description of what they were looking for and that they needed somebody tall who could sing, kick their face, and tap. I was like, that's me. So I emailed them right away and I was like, you've got to get me in the room for this. And they responded back, we're 10 steps ahead of you already. We're working on it. So I got the audition through them, and pretty much everything I've gotten since graduating, I've gotten through my representation after college.
Nice. How tall are you?
I'm 5'9".
Okay. So in your, you're like, then you're 6 foot basically in heels.
Yeah. I guess so. I've actually thought about that.
Yeah, you're like Leduca heel is usually 3 inches, no? 3 inches?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're a 6 footer up there. That's exactly what was on the list.
Jolly Green Giant. Yeah.
Get out of town. has that worked to your advantage in the past with other shows? Or like, what's it like as a 5'9 performer? Go with me here as I'm just going in the, I love to like, you are who you are. And sometimes it's amazing and sometimes it works against you. But I find that sometimes when it's working against you, because it does, people try to change who they are. And the times mm-hmm. that it would have worked for you, you're not being yourself. So you're screwed there too. So tell us a little bit about that. Not to make this about your height, but whatever. We'll see where it goes.
No, absolutely. I mean, I've always considered myself to be that stereotypical showgirl type, you know, the types of women that work with Susan Stroman, you know, they do The Producers, they do all those shows where you're expected to be tall and, you know, lean and in heels and with that nice bevel, you know, that's always the world in which I've seen myself fitting in. And so while I would have loved to, you know, be able to go in and be a little more successful at shows where they need people to be a little bit lower to the ground. You know, I find a lot of shows that are about like adolescence where they're doing a little more hip hop and stuff, like things like Mean Girls and The Prom, like they want them to be down and into the ground. Like I challenge myself stylistically with class and stuff like that. But the reality is like, I'm probably not going to get hired for those things because I'm more the height of who they would cast to play like the adults in those productions.
Yeah.
But on the other side of the coin, there are all these shows and all these things that I'll get to do that actresses that do fit in that world, they don't fit into mine. And so everybody has a pocket in the performing arts industry that they can thrive in and work in. And that's not to say that I don't think we should push the envelope in casting.
Yeah.
Because there are, you know, so many women who don't make the minimum of like 5'7" who also would do what I do so beautifully.
Right.
But you work with what you've got. And it's a good thing that I am really passionate about the type of work I get because of my type, especially since like I have the relationship with my mother who was a showgirl and that was the world that she lived in. And so I have these like photos of me in the Ziegfeld costume from Funny Girl next to the photos of her and her big feather head dresses and all that when she was in Vegas. And I'm like, that's really cool that I get to essentially, you know, continue the legacy. And so I've never felt, some people feel inhibited by the type that their physicality automatically puts them into. I'm more excited about it because that is what I like doing. So it's very fortunate for sure.
Did you have a choice growing up? Meaning, did your parents just like shove you into dance class or like you're doing this, or did they and you liked it anyways? Or like, what was that like growing up in a household of performers?
I apparently like begged to be in dance. I mean, I grew up around dancers. All of my mom's friends were the dancers that she worked with. And like my godmother, who I'm named after, Leslie Truby, sat next to my mother in the dressing room at Siegfried and Roy. Like, so I grew up around dancers. But I didn't really start to want to do that until my mom showed me the 1998 recording of Cats. And I became obsessed with it. I would watch it over and over again. I learned all the choreography, would dance in front of the TV when I was like 4 years old. And my parents said that they knew that they had to put me into dance class and that they were in trouble with me was that I wasn't mirroring the movement. So for example, when they were on their right foot, when you're a kid, you would look at that and you'd be on your left foot because you would mirror them. I was reversing it in my head, which is not something a normal 4-year-old does when they're watching movement on TV. And they were like, okay, she has the natural knack to dance. She obviously wants to dance. So let's put her in dance. And then ever since then, it's all I've ever wanted to do. I'm very fortunate that I was one of those people that I've just never wanted to do anything else. It's been that's been my trajectory since I was a little kid.
Yeah.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Okay, so you never wanted to do anything else, and here you are, you're doing it. What's it like? Is it what you thought? Is it not? Is it a little bit of everything? What's that been like?
It has been definitely overwhelming in every sense of that word, in all of the good feelings and all of the sometimes maybe not so good feelings or unexpected feelings. It's just been everything. What I love about our company, specifically at Funny Girl, is we have a really lovely balance between people who this is their 10th Broadway show and they've been around the block a few times, and anytime you have a question, you know exactly who to go to, and then also a nice healthy dosing of Broadway debuts and people who are just breaking into the industry with this show. So there's somebody to relate with and ask questions to and talk to no matter what experience you're having. There are so many times where I've gone to like the older company members and I've been like, is this normal? And they've been like, oh yeah, that's how it is. Or they're like, nope, that's not how this usually is. And so I learned so much from the people around me. It's definitely been, I think, different circumstantially because we came straight out of a Broadway shutdown and we were the first brand new revival to come out of the pandemic, to go straight into a proper rehearsal period, to cast during this time, to open, to previews, to do all of that. And there was a lot of, you know, struggles that came with that for sure. And so I understand that everything that I've gone through in this process has been unprecedented in every way, shape, and form. And that's been very exciting, honestly. I'm like, I'm never going to have another experience like this ever again. Even if I do get into, you know, hopefully another Broadway show in the future, it will never be like this one because everything about it was so special and nobody knew what was going to happen, especially, you know, things like COVID and just everything that's come with this time. And so it's been everything everywhere all at once.
Nice. Do you know off the top of your head how many other debuts are in your cast?
I want to say in the cast there were 12, somewhere around that number.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. I wonder Yeah, just like when you're casting that, if it was just coincidence or what? That's a lot. 12 people.
It is a lot.
Anyways, the tapping, speaking of tapping that you mentioned, is phenomenal. I saw the show when it was cold. I don't know. I had a coat on. I can't remember. Sometime in the earlier stages of the run. But wow. How was that process creating those numbers? Was it pretty much just set, or was it pretty collaborative in the room?
I mean, Ayodele Cassell and Anthony Moygerato, I have looked up to since I was a kid. I grew up being a pretty big hoofer. Like, I was the main tap dancer in my studio growing up. I always competed tap solos. And then when I got into college and everything, like, I still tapped, but definitely not to the extent that I was when I was a kid. But I always looked up to them, and I would see Anthony's choreography on So You Think You Can Dance. And second I saw their names on the breakdown, I was like, oh my gosh. And Ayodele's brain, I don't know how it works, but the way that she just sees and hears this movement, it's ethereal, it's otherworldly. Everything that we do on that stage is fully crafted by her. And a lot of people ask me that question, especially in regards to Jared Grimes, who, in my opinion, is one of the other goats of tap dance. I mean, that's indisputable. But they ask, they're like, oh, is he just kind of like making things up every night? Is he just kind of, you know, which other choreographers would let him do, and it would be fantastic. But no, it was all crafted by Ayodele, which I think makes it so much more impressive. The fact that you can think that up and then put it on bodies and get it as clean as it is. It's one of the coolest experiences of my life, getting to work with her. And I learn from doing that dance every single night. It's never perfect there any night. I'm like, all right, we're really going to focus on making all these sounds today. This is what I'm going to focus on today. Like, I constantly have to be thinking about it, which I can't say in every single other dance I've done in my career. You know, you kind of go on autopilot and you're like, oh, I know how to do this and stuff. It's like, no, rat, tat, tat. I have to fully focus on and think about every single time I do it. It's been an unbelievable challenge that I'm just so thankful for. They're incredible.
Yeah, it can be monotonous and tedious doing 8 shows a week, week in and week out. But if you feel like you have a fresh challenge nightly, that's definitely going to keep things a lot more interesting for you up there. So amazing. Love to hear it. The show itself, were you a fan going into it as far as the material? Besides being a hoofer and all that, were you excited to be a part of the show Funny Girl, or did it have to grow on you, or do you not even like it? We won't tell anyone if that's your answer. We won't tell.
I do like Funny Girl. I love Funny Girl. I never watched the movie growing up, but I did the show in 2016 at Arrow Rock. That was my first introduction to the actual musical. I mean, I knew the songs from, honestly, from watching Glee, from watching Lea Michele do Don't Rain on My Parade on Glee. That was my first introduction to it. But then I got to do it back after my freshman year of college. And I loved it then. I think even back then, there were rumors of a revival coming, you know, in all the many iterations that sort of never made it to Broadway before ours. So I have always liked the show, and I have always had it in the back of my mind of, oh, the second that revival pops up, like, I've got to be in that. Yeah. And then with this rendition of the show, we had, you know, the incredible legend Harvey Weierstein rewrite parts of our book. And I think he did an exquisite job. He made so many things tighter. They make more sense. The thread of this being a memory play, you know, and kind of bringing in Follies-esque type ghosts to remind you that this is all in Fanny's memory and imagination. I think it's really beautiful. What our team has done with it. I think it's a successful telling of this story, and I do like it. I love it. I love doing the show every night.
Nice. Good. I'm glad to hear it, genuinely, because sometimes it's not always the case. Let's circle back to the silly talk of like the Las Vegas Mike Tyson thing and the growing up in Vegas and the show choir thing in Missouri. Who's Leslie off of the stage or out of the rehearsal room or out of dance class? Do we find you in Williamsburg, like sipping a cortada and a fresh baguette? Like, what do you do outside of theater?
Oh, man, I just love being with my people. I'm always down for, you know, grabbing a couple friends and going for a walk, grabbing a coffee, going through the park, doing things outside. Especially when I was living back in Vegas, you found me at the pool literally every single day with like a frozen drink in my hand. You know, I love chilling and relaxing and being in the sunshine, especially being from the desert. You know, that's one of the best parts of being in Las Vegas, is that you're just surrounded by vitamin D all the time. So anytime I can be outside, I am.
Yeah.
I'm also a little bit of a nerd. During the pandemic, I got super into Dungeons and Dragons. And I'm obsessed with it.
Okay. Tell me more.
I fully recommend it to all actors or creatives in general who need a different outlet or something to feel like their creative juices need to be refreshed a little bit. Having to fully create from scratch, like a character, and it could be anything, like a goblin, an elf, a wizard, and come up with a backstory for them, and then have someone lead you through this adventure. It's the ultimate form of escapism, and I am obsessed with it. I would sit on Zoom with my friends for like 6 hours at a time during the pandemic, and we would just go through these adventures, and I would just fight the bad guys and, you know, try to find the thing. And I love it. I think it's so much fun, and it was the perfect way to forget about things a little for a while, but then also feel like I was still furthering forward my storytelling abilities, you know, because that's the entirety of what that game is. It's improving and telling a story and creating a character. And so I love that. That's definitely probably one of the most unexpected things about me. Like, when people meet me, they don't expect that I'm going to say like, I'm super into Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah. That's, I think there's like a interactive audience improv play there, you know, a Dungeons and Dragons show where like each night the show's a little different because the audience gets to choose XYZ. What do you think? Is there something there?
That, a choose your own adventure D&D show. That would be so awesome. And, you know, dice are a huge part of Dungeons and Dragons. It'd be really cool if the audience had dice that controlled everything. Oh, that would be awesome. I'll start writing that. That sounds fierce.
What if you just had like one huge die on one side and on one on the other of stage left, stage right, and then at random parts of the show, they would just like roll onto the stage, and however they landed, that decided the future of the show.
I'm obsessed. Let's make it happen. I'll paper mache those dice. That sounds fun.
Okay, well, while you're backstage during other parts of the show that you're not in, that's your assignment, is to start writing up Dungeons and Dragons, the newest Broadway play coming in 2023, next summer.
I can make this happen. It will have tomfoolery. It will have a tap number. It will be absolutely ridiculous. I'm excited.
Okay, I can't wait. All right, so we'll wrap up with two more questions. So besides the Dungeons and Dragons, you're new to New York-ish. What's a favorite like New York thing that you like to do? A place to go in New York, a restaurant, a rooftop, a park, yada, yada.
I'm going to mention this, and all of my friends listening back on this are going to laugh at me. My favorite place in New York City is the Taco Boat.
The Taco Boat. Tell me more. I don't know about this thing.
The Taco Boat. It's off of Pier 81. It is a floating Mexican restaurant, and you just sail down the Hudson eating tacos, drinking margaritas. It is the best time ever. I'm obsessed with it. I love the Taco Boat.
So how does the Taco Boat, is there like designated times where it'll like return and deport and port and, you know, how does that work?
Yeah, it sails like every 2 hours. It's a 2-hour cruise, and you go on and you like purchase a time to go on. And then you just go and you get seated like, you know, any other restaurant, except you're on a boat. Last time I was on it with a bunch of my performer friends, they were like playing a bunch of music and everything. And my friend stands up. He he does like a little shimmy and the rest of the boat goes wild. So he grabs my hand, pulls me up, and we start doing a samba in the middle of the taco boat. And the bartender gave us a free round of shots. So
hey, there you go. There you go. You can't take these performers anywhere. They're just always making a scene.
And we're always doing it for the free stuff, you know.
I have Elise Needery that does our yoga flow program for Built for the Stage. When I first met her, on her bio and her Instagram, it said something like riding bikes and trying free samples. And I thought that was so funny that she would mention like her love for free samples.
We love the free gift with purchase. It's one of the best things about being here.
All right. Well, Leslie, I appreciate you being on the show. Appreciate your time. Yeah, you're lovely and you're awesome up there. Congrats with Funny Girl. What's next, do you think? You're going to ride it out? What are you going to do? What's happening with you? Are you going to depart from the show? Are you staying or are you leaving? What's going to happen?
I'm staying. I'll stay for as long as they'll have me. I mean, everything with our show right now is pretty up in the air. We have this casting change that's about to happen. Leah and Tova open the show on the 6th, which is very exciting. We don't know where it's going. I mean, I love being with this company. I love being with the show. So I'll be with it for, you know, as long as it feels correct. And, you know, my contract's for a year. So hopefully we make it to that. And I want people to come see us and support us and keep us running for a long time. Cause I would love to stay with it.
Awesome. Well, we're rooting for you. You heard it from Leslie there. If you're in the New York area, go see Funny Girl, and please follow Leslie at Leslie Blake Walker on the Instagram. You can find that in the description of this episode, as well as her website, where you can read more about the Mike Tyson story. Leslie, thanks so much for being on Built for the Stage podcast.
Thank you. This was so fun.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening in. Again, that was Leslie Blake Walker. I'm Joe Roscoe, founder of Built for the Stage. If you want to try that free trial, go to builtforthestage.com. Actors are athletes, so start training like one. Later.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.